Welcome to Lessons in Leadership, Steve Adubato with the Mary Gambit. Mary, that is, I don't think I've ever seen that outfit on you before.
No, nope, trying to switch it up. I mean,
we're not exactly matching because I'm not a fan of wearing black. This is gray, dark gray with a gray tie. You got what?
Believe it or not, it's so funny. Frank, our very talented audio engineer, had mentioned before, he's like, oh, is that black? And it's actually a dark, dark navy. But the lighting picks up things differently. But I love trying different colors. And it's just a lot of fun. Mix it up a little bit.
Yeah, I like to do all kinds of wild things dress-wise.
I know you do.
Listen, we're about to introduce a segment that I did with our good friend, Dr. Lamont Repelette, who's the president of Kane University, former commissioner. Talk about a big, important job. Commissioner of the Department of Education in New Jersey. He's the co-author of a really interesting book, Leadership by Design, Winning Hearts, Building Your Brand and Achieving Success. I sat down with Dr. Repelette to talk to him about his leadership book. I'm fascinated by his approach to leadership and his book. Mary, in that conversation, what jumped out for you?
The biggest thing is, and it's right in the title, the Leadership by Design, Winning Hearts, Building Your Brand and Achieving Success. And Dr. Repelette talked about the fact that being intentional in leadership is one of the biggest keys. And if you keep those three things at the forefront, again, those three frameworks, as he calls them, building heart, building your brand, and success, you will be a successful leader. So that to me really stood out. I love things that are simple and not more than two or three steps, because then I forget what was said earlier.
And you know what's interesting? Because Mary knows better than anyone, how many books have we done together?
Six.
So, and she keeps saying, if you do another one, you're doing it alone. She's right. I get it. I understand. She's tapping.
Well, you wouldn't do it alone. I would find someone to do it with you, but we had a good run. It's a lot of work. Those books are a lot of work.
But the reason I'm saying this is because when you write a leadership book, you think you have the answers, and you begin to realize when you talk to someone like Lamont Repelette, he has a different perspective on it. And I realize how much you can learn. I'm not a fan of people who say I'm a leadership expert, which means you think you know everything about leadership, which is a joke. To me, you're a student of leadership. And being a student of leadership, talking to Dr. Repelette allowed me, in reading his book, to understand he has a totally different view of certain aspects of leadership than I do. In some areas, we agree. But what's fascinating to me is it opened up my mind, including, I'll give you one, Mary. He said, great leadership is something you're not necessarily born with. It's designed. I'm sitting there going, how many people have told us I'm not a natural born leader? And Lamont says, don't worry about whether you're a natural born leader or not. It can be designed and strategic and you can work on it. Go ahead.
It's like any other skill in life. It's like saying I'm not a guitar player, or I'm not a singer. Anything can be learned if you put in the work. And I mean that. I truly believe that anything can be learned, but you need to put in the work to do so. It's not, you can't just simply say, I am not a leader. That's saying that it's a this or that, yes or no equation. And it's not. I mean, there are scales to leadership. Sure, you may not be as confident as you want to be as a leader, but making that decision to improve your leadership skills is the first step.
And we've said this a million times, Mary, did you say to me when we first met 20 some odd years ago, I'm not a public communicator? You actually made the statement, that's not me.
I did. And now I love it. I look for every opportunity to do it. I need to pull back sometimes because I feel like I just want to project and not be the center of attention, because that makes it sound very narcissistic. But it's, I feel like I have something to share and I feel very good and confident about sharing that.
But that means that what you said you were was only what you saw in yourself at the time.
At that moment.
Which was safe. And some other people around you, not mentioning anyone, said, I don't know. I think you have more to offer. And it's the same thing that Dr. Repelette is saying. Just because you say I'm not a natural born leader, he says, okay, so everyone needs to lead on some level. You have an opportunity to design a game plan and work on it. And that's what the book's about. By the way, Mary, why is it also exciting for Dr. Repelette and our team and his university, Kane University, and what we are talking about doing in the spring of 2026?
It's going to be amazing. We are going to do a fireside chat where you and Dr. Repelette sit down. Sylvester and Post is going to put up your two books. And it'll be the battle of the leadership gurus. No, I'm just kidding. You are going to share, you're going to inform that audience, and it's going to be an inspiring conversation because, as you said, leadership is not something that's perceived the same way by everyone. So, hearing each of your respective takes, hearing your different backgrounds, him from academia, you from the media world, it's going to be a really great and engaging conversation for sure.
And also be in front of a terrific audience down at Kane University in beautiful Union, New Jersey, one of their several campuses. That's the
And
main
my
campus.
alma mater.
It's your alma mater. I forgot that, Mary. I apologize. So, listen, one-on-one lessons, many lessons in leadership with the Dr. Lamont Repelet, the president of Kane University. Check it out. We kick off the program with our longtime friend, Dr. Lamont Repelet, president of Kane University, Jersey City, which we'll talk about in just a moment, and the co-author of a compelling new book called Leadership by Design: Winning Hearts, Building Your Brand, and Achieving Success. And he's also on the 2005 ROI Power List and the New Jersey Business Magazine's Innovate 100 list, two of our media partners. Good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you, Steve. How you doing, sir? Thank you for having us. Thank you for having me.
Always. You think you're busy enough?
Just a little bit, just a little bit, but I kind of like it that way, right?
I love it. Hey, listen, by the way, check out previous interviews we've done with Dr. Repelet. And Kane is one of our higher ed, our significant, very significant higher ed partners. Let me put that out there. I'm looking at the table of contents. There's so many areas I want to talk about, but the one I want to jump right into, is this book, because I write about leadership, coach about leadership. This is about more than leadership. Why is it not just leadership by design, but winning hearts and building your brand and achievement? What's all that?
Well, this book is a compilation of Steve, about lived experiences, right? My lived experience as a leader. It's about how to interact with individuals. It's about being authentic. It's about always being centered, people-centered. So there's this quote that I've had for years that was always on my cover letter. I'm not quite sure the quote, whoever authored this, but it said, "People are the greatest asset in any organization." And as a result of that, my leadership kind of built around being people-centered, right? I always say that, right? Whether student-centered, when I was in the school systems, when now as a leader, people-centered. And it's always been about authenticity. And so leadership by design is pretty much a manuscript for those who prescribe to leadership, to learn about leadership, right? It's not a novel. It's not something that I encourage you to read from page one to end of the page. It's about something that we can pick and choose a la carte to look at things that maybe you may find yourself meaning want to learn more about, whether it's being the chief architect in chapter one. And that goes back to leadership by design. So leadership by design is being very intentional. The book is also based off of faith, right? So winning hearts is about faith. It's about trust. It's about when people are watching you in action, how do they react based off of your decisions? And I think that's winning hearts, right? And then also building your brand. Building your brand equates to your brand, your character, the values you espouse. And so if you look at those things, and the last piece is always got to be, when you have to have some metrics and have to better be able to achieve success, right? There need to be elements to show that you've achieved success, or you have a plan of action or strategic plan of action to identify that. So I took the fact that the book is about intentionality, leadership by design, being intentional. That's why I call myself the chief architect. But then also I talked about the faith aspect, right? You're talking about Ecclesiastic chapter 4, verse 12, and it talks about the three strands. I've always used things in threes. And so if you look at the three strands, each strand together could hold itself, but when it each individually, but together it's strengthened. And I think if you're looking at your leadership being intentional, creating a culture, being of high value, moral, and your mission, and being guided by that and success, then now you have the ability to sustain your leadership because based off of those three characteristics, which we call our framework, our three frameworks, which is building your hearts, building your brand, achieving success. So the book was based off of my lived experiences. It's
Right.
based off my faith, understanding that my faith is strong. And when you do that, you win hearts, you build your brand, right, and you achieve success.
Lot going on there, folks, which is
Yes, it
why
is.
there is. But also, my colleague Mary Gamba, who is the executive producer and co-anchor of our series, our sister series, Lessons in Leadership, we're going to take this interview on Dr. Repelit's book that he wrote in cooperation with Robin Landa, who is the co-author of the book. We're going to use it on our Lessons in Leadership series as well. But I want to go into this a little deeper. You said a la carte. You want to do a la carte? We're going to do a la carte.
Let's do a la carte. Let's do a la carte.
You say that great leadership isn't born, it's designed. What about those who say, Dr. Repelit, come on. And people say this to me in my leadership seminars all the time. I'm not a natural leader, Steve. I wasn't born to be a leader. And you're saying, what? It's designed. Pick it up.
So, some folks would say, I wasn't born to be a leader. However, leadership, like anything, is a science, right? Leadership is a science. Let's just break it down. Leadership, let's look at leader. In order to be a leader, you have to lead individuals, right? Simple as that. And so those individuals will follow you. However, some folks are natural born leaders, right? They actually can get up and command a space. Some folks actually are strategic and planning, but may not have the presence. But however, when you're intentional about your leadership, you can design a system that benefits your personality. We talk about leadership styles later on in the book. You can benefit those things. So when we're talking about, the science of leadership, you're talking about learning the ability to lead others, how to inspire an individual, right? What is your mission? What's your vision? And how do you get the best out of folks in order for you to have those outcomes? And I think that's where it is. So I would say it's intentional because, like a strategic plan, you have to be strategic in how you look at things and how you approach. I always talk about the art of war being strategic. I talked about our plans, understanding that being intentional what we do. So I think for me, the book is really about being intentional and how to develop those skills in order to be intentional, right? So for us, this book is about how do you develop the skills necessary to be intentional in your leadership approach.
I'm going to get a quick answer to this if I can. In my book, Lessons in Leadership 2.0, The Tough Stuff, I have a chapter called, Is Everyone Really a Leader? And I also make the argument, it's not about my book, it's about yours, but I say everyone can and should become a leader on a great team. And someone would say to me, Steve, we need doers on the team to wait to be told what to do. My response is, on a great team, not so sure. Do you believe, Dr. Lamont, that everyone on a great team, not an average or mediocre team, can and should become some form of a leader, please?
Yes, I do agree with the fact that individuals on great teams can be leaders because they can lead within their division, within their sphere of influence. All right. And so that's how you become the great leader. Now, collectively, if you have individuals that are leading their division, their office, their unit, their whatever it is they have, whatever sphere of influence they have to lead, then collectively you add those pieces up, right? The sum of the whole, and now you have a complete group of individuals who are leading the unit, the division, or the organization the way you what you designed it to be. Because within it,
Okay.
you should have your mission. See, folks need to understand where we're going and how we're going to get there. And I think as you start to look at those individuals that's on the team, they need to lead their teams because there's a team and there's a team and there's a team. And so that's the take the fact that people can be leaders on a team, even if they're divisional leaders, even if they're unit leaders, office leaders, but they can be leaders.
Wow. There's another chapter, one of my favorite chapters. The crystal ball effect. What is that, and why are you smiling?
Because that was drawn, honestly, I created the crystal ball effect when I was a superintendent at Asbury Park Schools.
By the way, by way of background, we're talking to the former head of the Department of Education, the state of New Jersey, a really big job, superintendent in the school system. Where again?
Asbury Park Public School District.
Just a few challenges. So we're talking to Dr. Lamont Repelit. Let's just say he's led in some challenging situations. Pick it up, doctor.
And so it was challenging times in Asbury Park, and I wanted to demonstrate the individual where we can go and how far we can lead this organization. But because of systemic failure within the organization, they were had blinders on and they couldn't see ahead. And so I created this concept that I call the crystal ball effect because I needed to demonstrate to show individuals the future and then work ourselves back from that. Right. And so what I've done for that is that we created these incredible videos that depict the university, I'm sorry, depicted the school district as this thriving academic center. Branding, social media, the videos captured what we could become if we just imagine it. All right. And so I showed them the future. And then I talked about each individual, their role they can play within this future. So I would say, Principle X, if you do X, Y, and Z, this can be the future. But they couldn't see it though. They couldn't imagine it because of systemic failures, because of whatever challenge they may have had in front of them. So the crystal ball effect shows in the future and then allows us now to be intentional to create a strategic plan to reach that mission and to reach that vision.
Get the book. It is called Leadership by Design, and the subtitle is, and Dr. Lamont Repelin is the co-author, Leadership by Design, Winning Hearts, Building Your Brand, and Achieving Success. We've only scratched the surface. Thank you, my friend. Well done. Congratulations.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you for having me.
You're a great partner. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Buccino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Prager Metis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, NJ Transit, the North Ward Center, O'Toole Scrivo, Gingoli Construction, New Jersey Sharing Network, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, inspiring great minds to greater purpose since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA, and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ, and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
How long you been waiting?
About a half hour.
Brutal. This keeps up, I'm gonna miss my pickleball game.
I've been waiting 8 years for a kidney. What can you do?
Over 100,000 people in the U.S. are waiting for a life-saving transplant, but you can do your part in an instant. Register as an organ donor today at njsn.org.
Mary and I are honored to welcome the 60th Attorney General of the great state of New Jersey, Christopher Perino, who's litigation chair, department chair at Lowenstein Sandler LLP, one of the most significant law firms in the state and nation. Chris, good to see you, my friend.
Steve, Mary, thank you for inviting me.
Let's do this before we talk about your work at Lowenstein. Describe for folks, as there is a new administration taking over New Jersey, Governor Sherrill, a new attorney general taking over. Describe the job of attorney general and its connection to great leadership.
Well, let me say it this way, right? I mean, and maybe Jen Davenport, who's an extraordinary public servant, is the exception. But most people,
the new
attorney general, who made it through judiciary yesterday with flying colors. Most people who end up in that job, including me, don't deserve the job. They don't deserve the opportunity. It's something that you are fortunate enough to have the chance to do. It's, you have to be lucky in some respect. With respect to the leadership there, you walk in and you're crowned with this title as Attorney General, and people think your jokes are funnier. They listen very carefully to everything you say. When you walk into a room, they stand up. And what I would say about that is, if you can't lead effectively with that head start, then maybe leadership isn't your fit. But what I learned in that job, in particular, leadership can be different between the public sector and the private sector, is you really, in my estimation, and Jen Davenport has this in spades, you need to be humble. You need to listen. You need to hear, truly hear what the career prosecutors and public servants are telling you. And you need to create an environment where people feel safe enough to disagree with you. Because, they know this business. They've been there for years before you got there, and they'll be there for years after you're gone. You have to hear what they say. And that doesn't mean you don't use your own independent judgment, instinct, and the rest, but those people are really knowledgeable. You have to take advantage of that. And I think Jen will do a great job of that as Attorney General.
Well said. And by the way, this is part of our series, Leaders in Law. We're talking to leaders in the field of law all across the state and the nation, and we're proud to have Chris with us. Mary, jump in.
Chris, hearing you talk about humility, hearing you talking about the importance of listening, it playing word association, trust immediately came to my mind. Can you talk a little bit about what that trust looks like, especially as Attorney General? You must, I'm assuming, have to gain the trust of those around you, but then in turn, as a leader, you must trust those around you. Talk about what trust and the leadership lessons that you learned through your tenure when it comes to trust and leadership.
Yeah, so it's a funny thing, you know. In the public sector, when you're blessed with one of these fancy titles, people will do what you say. Yeah, if you order them to do X, Y, or Z, they will do X, Y, and Z. They'll do it quickly, and they'll do it well. But what I have found in this business and in life in general, anyone who believes that they're right 100% of the time can't be trusted. You can't trust. I can't trust somebody who believes or pretends that they're right all the time, because none of us are right all the time. Hopefully we're right most of the time. And it's the ability and the willingness to be open to the reality that as information comes in, as more data points arrive, the decision you made may have to be adjusted. And by the way, you may have made the wrong decision. And the ability as a leader, as Attorney General, in the role I'm in now, to be able to say, you know what? That probably wasn't exactly the right path. Let's take a left turn, or let's adjust the direction just a bit. The ability to be flexible that way, I think, is really important. And I think it helps breed trust among your colleagues.
Chris, let me follow up on that. At Lowenstein Sandler, as the head of the litigation department, a big part of our focus, and our firm, our private firm, Stand Deliver, does a lot of leadership and communication coaching with different law firms. And one of the things that I keep focusing on and thinking about is mentorship. To what degree do you see yourself, in addition to being effective, you're also a rainmaker at the firm. You have a responsibility in business development, obviously. You're a great litigator in the courtroom, a negotiator, sometimes to not go into courtroom and get the best possible outcome, all that. To what degree do you see yourself as a leader at Lowenstein Sandler being a mentor, an intentional, consistent mentor to other younger lawyers who are coming into the business?
Yeah, so it's a great question and something that's so important to me personally and to the law firm. What I've tried to do in the last, about 8 years or so since I've been back from the government, is to not only think about and be an active mentor to lawyers in the firm, but to also recruit lawyers from the outside who I believe are going to be effective mentors. Because, there's only so much one person can do in terms of true, effective, boots on the ground, hand-to-hand, mentorship.
Right.
You need others within the organization to do that too. And so when you have the opportunity, this is a big part of the reason that I came back to Lowenstein Sandler, is to be able to bring people aboard who I thought would be effective at doing it as well. So,
hold on, Chris, yeah. What are you looking for? I'm sorry for interrupting. What are you looking for in them?
So a couple of things. First, you have to be a willing participant. The individual has to care about mentorship of or junior people. And so when I was out of law school, my first job was as a law clerk in federal court for then magistrate judge Freda Wolfson. She rose to become the chief of the district and is now my partner. She, when I think about mentorship, right, she was among my most important, if not my most important mentor. Now she's back at the law firm where she actually started before I was ever there. And she is she has a full-time job too, representing clients and doing the things that she does as a neutral and a mediator, but she is actively mentoring dozens of people. And, it's a two-way street. People have to, younger folks want to have to be mentored by whoever the mentor is. And with Freda Wolfson, people are running to her. Justice Barry Albin, who's joined recently, it's the same thing.
Formerly served on the highest court.
Supreme Court of New Jersey for 20 plus years, trial lawyer before that. If you're a young lawyer and you have the chance to spend some time with Justice Alman or Chief Judge Freda Wolfson, that's where you're going to spend your time. And so it's not only about me trying to do my part. It's also trying to find people who are going to really serve in those roles. And that's just a couple of examples of folks who are doing it.
Good stuff. Go ahead, Mary.
Chris, on the opposite side of the spectrum, what do you say to those leaders that say, I've arrived, I'm here, I don't need to learn anything more? Steve and I talk on Lessons in Leadership all the time about the importance of developing yourself and the importance of leaders being lifelong learners. Talk about your perspective on that.
Well, I guess I would say it this way. We don't have any of those, or don't have any of them anymore at Lowenstein, because that's just not a mindset that works. We've all been in our professions long enough to know they're extraordinarily complex. I'm learning every day. I'm trying to figure out how to be more effective as a lawyer and a leader. And anyone who, you know, believes that, like, okay, they're done, they know it all, that's like being right 100% of the time. I can't trust someone like that, and I don't want to work with anyone like that.
It's funny, last question on my point I want to make in a question. When someone says I'm done learning, my response is, you're right, you're done. Literally, you're done.
It's really true. It's really true.
But as a litigator, I've got a minute left. Your confidence, we do a lot of coaching around confidence. Well, I'm not that confident when I speak in front of people. My response is, keep doing it, making mistakes, get feedback, get up on the horse, do it again, do it again. Can you remember the first time you're in a courtroom, the degree of confidence you felt versus now? Go, got a minute left.
I don't ever feel confident standing up. I'm always nervous. I try not to show it, but I'll tell you in 30 seconds, you know, when I became attorney general and I was walking out to do my first press conference, I stopped off into the bathroom and I looked in the mirror and I said out loud, they think you're the attorney general. So go out there and be that person. I just don't have that level of confidence. I'm always, worried and nervous and whatever. And preparation is the antidote for that.
Last point on that. I appreciate Chris's point. When someone says I'm nervous and I'm anxious, even though they've worked to prepare, my response is, yep, it's because you care. Because you care about your performance. Go ahead, Chris, final word.
I'm nervous about coming to meet Mary and Steve today.
No, so, you're making that up, Chris.
I'm telling you, I don't know whether it's, whether it's good or bad, but, you know, anxiety is a great motivator.
All right, before we go, Alvin, I know our director, we got to go. Chris is going to get this right. There's one other person named Chris whom we know who is never not confident. He's always confident, never nervous. What's his last name?
Chris Christie.
That's who appointed you. And that's your good friend and my friend as well. That's Chris Perino, former Attorney General, 60th Attorney General, Litigation Department Chair at Lowenstein Sandler LLP. Chris, great to see you, my friend. All the best. Take care.
Thank you so much, Mary and Steve. Nice to see you.
Got it. Folks, I'm Steve Adubato. That's Mary Gamba. This is Lessons in Leadership. We'll see you next time. This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Vicino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, PragerMedis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, NJ Transit, the Northport Center, O'Toole Scrivo, Gingoli Construction, New Jersey Sharing Network, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, inspiring great minds to greater purpose since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA, and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ, and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
How long you been waiting?
About a half hour.
Brutal. This keeps up, I'm gonna miss my pickleball game.
I've been waiting 8 years for a kidney. What can you do?
Over 100,000 people in the U.S. are waiting for a life-saving transplant. But you can do your part in an instant. Register as an organ donor today at njsn.org.